really just an interesting read in the New York Times about a week ago about the so-called shadow docket at the Supreme Court and how it went from a more underutilized tool, or perhaps utilized perfectly, but not all that much, to something that some critics would say has blown up considerably in its usage. Here to chat about that is Professor Jason Mazzoni from the College of Law at the University of Illinois. It's been a while, Jason, but welcome back to Let's Get Legal.
Thank you, John. I thought maybe you had forgotten about me, so it's good to be back.
No. We hadn't forgotten about you, and as soon as I read this story, I knew I had to get you on. Let's just briefly explain to people what is different about the shadow docket versus the more traditional way we interpret the Supreme Court is moving slowly, deliberately, arguing through things and coming out with decisions at not a very quick pace. What's the shadow docket?
Okay, so sure. So first of all, the Supreme Court itself does not call it the shadow docket. We should be clear about that.
True.
Shadow docket is a term that's used mostly by critics of everything you just described. The court would refer to it as the emergency docket or the interim docket. As you suggested, most cases before the court arrive after a carefully reasoned decision by lower courts, and then the Supreme Court is reviewing what they've done. The court has an orderly schedule for parties to submit extensive briefs on all sides of the issue. Then there's an oral argument, and then the justices deliberate. And a few months later, you get an opinion or a set of opinions explaining the basis for what the court has decided. So in that sense, the Supreme Court is, we're used to it being a quite transparent institution. It tells the parties before them why they won or lost, and the public sees that explanation in detail as well. So with respect to the emergency docket, or the shadow docket, if you don't like what the court is doing, you don't get many of those things. So this is instances in which the court is deciding issues, and I think increasingly deciding issues with national importance, deciding them quickly, with limited briefing, without oral argument, without the issues having been worked out fully in the lower courts, without a period for the justices to work through the issues carefully. And then I think this is the thing that troubles many critics, issuing rulings that don't quite explain, or perhaps don't explain at all, the basis for the decision. So sometimes an order is just issued with no explanation. Sometimes the explanation is very brief. And this then stands in contrast to our usual experience, long opinions setting out the justification, sometimes too long. You can ask my students, you have to read them. So I think those are the features of what the New York Times was reporting and that others have commented on as something that's happening in the court with increasing frequency in recent years.
Yeah, and look, the emergency docket is, of course, needed for death row cases and for election cases that have to be ruled quickly. I get it, and it has been used in history. It in itself is not new. The New York Times piece, which I don't want to get too into the weeds about, but people should go read it, is a real behind-the-scenes look at a 2016 case that was coming towards the end of the Obama administration about what they wanted to do on a green energy initiative. That the back and forth, which is fascinating to read through, starting with Chief Justice John Roberts, basically arguing, look, we need to stay this earlier case or this district court case and at least prevent this from being enacted. We can discuss the merits of the case later, but the consequences of not doing so or stopping this from moving forward would be too dire and rule the court moot, which people could argue back and forth on whether that's true or not. But that does bring up an interesting point about all this, Professor Mazzoni, is that a lot of times when, especially recently, a lot of the court cases that they, not on the merits, but on the process, have ruled in favor of the Trump administration, whether it's deportations or other things, they may not have ruled on the merits, but even staying or allowing the order to go through this so-called shadow docket, some of these cases end up being almost like permanent solutions because you can't go back and unwind what's already been done. Does it make any sense what I'm suggesting?
No, it does make sense, I think your starting point is right, that the court is intervening really at an early stage of the case. And so the ostensible justification is to freeze the status quo or freeze a status quo so that things can work out in the lower courts and then maybe go back to the Supreme Court. And the court's view is that in some instances, and this was true in the 2016 case that you mentioned, that if we don't do that, things will have progressed so far that there won't really be any opportunity for us to actually review the lawfulness of what the Obama administration was doing in that context. And that context was, again, we don't need to get into the weeds of it, was a massive, massively ambitious and costly clean power plan that would have imposed lots of immediate costs upon the power industry, things that could not have been kind of undone if it turned out that that all of that was unlawful. I know good, there were potential arguments on both sides, but I think your instinct is right that some of these emergency orders, just because of the circumstances of the case, might end up being the kind of permanent resolution of the case, or be so significant that litigation doesn't really alter things, even if it proceeds later on. I think, you know, what we've seen, and I think this goes to your point also, in the past few years, and particularly with respect to the Trump administration, where there's been a huge uptick in these emergency applications. And I think, you know, there are some interesting reasons sort of why that has happened. One is that presidents these days, and I think this is especially true of Trump, they're just doing a whole lot more. So President Trump has issued many, many, many executive orders across a wide range of areas. So presidents kind of doing a lot. And then you have a lot of lower courts that have been aggressively blocking these kinds of presidential initiatives. On that, though, somebody who's challenging something, let's say the Trump administration is doing in the lower federal court, these individuals or entities are typically engaged in what we call forum shopping. So they're picking a lower court that is going to be very favorable to their position, and perhaps a court that's sort of out of the mainstream. And those lower courts had for a long time been issuing nationwide injunctions. So rather than just a remedy for the individual parties who bring the claim, blocking presidential action all over the country. And so that creates a kind of additional incentive for the president to want to actually go up to the Supreme Court, because the effect of the lower court ruling applies now nationally, not just in, you know, a particular part of the country. And then the other thing I'd say is that there is maybe a perception that the current Supreme Court favors the president, because the president seems to win a lot of these applications for emergency relief. But I will say, again, the lower court decisions might not be reflective of the views of most other justices, most other judges or of the justices. But also the Trump administration is being very careful about choosing the kinds of cases in which it's lost in the lower courts that it's going to take to the Supreme Court. And it only takes a minority of them. It only takes the one where it really thinks it has a good chance of winning. Right. And so the success rate is a little bit, you know,
skewed because they know which. Yeah. I hate to interrupt you, Professor Mazzoni, but we are just scratching the surface, but we are out of time. Let's pick this up another time, Professor, because this issue is not going away. And I think a lot of transparency folks would say, hey, the more rulings we get with complete oral arguments and more, the better off we are. But we got to go. I apologize, my friend. We'll talk soon, okay?
Thanks, John. Appreciate it. Bye-bye.